Dave asked me, Dave did his story in January, as you remember, and he asked me whether I'd do mine. So perhaps foolishly, I agreed. He said his story was boring. I suppose if being born in the Congo in a civil war and having to sort of, you know, narrowly escaping death is boring, then mine's probably pretty boring as well. But in doing it, I remembered loads of things that I thought I'd long forgotten. And this might take a while, because I've got 57 years old to kind of condense into 45 minutes or whatever it takes. All things work together for good. That's the title. Okay. Let's just read that. We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So I was born in Bridgewater, Somerset, in 1957. We lived in Burnham-on-Sea. My father worked for his father's civil engineering business. My father's family was from Scotland, and my mother was a London girl, and they met in an amateur dramatics production. I've no idea where, but so that's me. That's lots of me, actually. I hear. We moved to London. I'm not really sure where, probably North London. I don't really know. When I was probably one for a while, and then Thundersley in Essex when I was about 18 months old. And my earliest memory is riding my little trike around the corner there in Thundersley, and I can't have been, you know, barely two, if that. But it's the only thing I can remember of that place. 1960, my father got a job with MEL in Crawley, as it was then. We moved to Gossip's Green. When I was young, we used to do really, really exciting things like go to holidays to Butlins in Bognor or Clacton, you know. I remember one year I won a Gentleman Jim prize or something, probably at the age of about three or four. And the prize was a big blue and red plastic lorry. And I always remember what happened to that. I've actually no idea. In 1962, my brother Keith was born. And this was strange because I knew absolutely nothing about it. I mean, here I was, nearly four and a half or whatever. And I was introduced to him in the bedroom. My parents said, oh, come in, we've got somebody for you to meet. And there was this, my baby brother, who I knew absolutely nothing about until that time. So that was quite an experience. I started in 1963 in Gossip's Green Infant School. You started school a bit later in those days. It's like we start at four now. Those days you started at five, or the term after you were five or something like that. I remember my first day at school, my very first day, and I had school dinners. And I don't know what, I was very upset or whatever. I was crying, and the dinner lady came to me and she said, do you want somebody to cut your sausages? She thought I was crying because I wanted somebody to cut my sausages. I don't think that was the greatest piece of emotional intelligence in the world. But anyway, now, fairly soon afterwards, my father, God rest his soul, started an affair with one of the teachers at the school. Who actually taught me, actually. Of course, I knew nothing about this and what was going on or anything. I used to visit her house. She was divorced. She had two children as well. I remember watching the first episodes of Doctor Who there, William Hartnell, black and white, in November 1963. March 1964, we moved to Arden Road, Furnace Green, which was a house actually later occupied by Tony and Anne Folger, for those of you that remember Tony and Anne. So that was a bit of a coincidence, if you believe in those sort of things. For a term, I was still at Gossip's Green School then, so I was travelling as an infant on my own by bus to school in Gossip's Green, backwards and forwards every day. I remember I missed the bus one day. I was just waving and it went straight past and I missed it, and this was a big disaster. And eventually I got to Crawley bus station and they looked after me there for a while until I could be rescued. And in 1964, September, I started at Robert May Junior School in Furnace Green, which has since been demolished and replaced by a housing estate. My father was around less and less during the time in Furnace Green, but I never realised he wasn't staying the night. I just went to bed and they kind of kept that from me. I got interested in the offshore pirate radio stations when I was little. I used to listen to them on a homemade transistor radio that I built from a kit. I had this kit that could build lots of different types of radios, and I used to assemble them and reassemble them and everything. It was great. I was mortified when most of them were closed down by the government in 1967. I marched down Furnace Drive with a placard complaining about it at the age of nine or whatever, trying to get a demonstration going. But that was an interest I maintained throughout the 70s and 80s. And another kind of memory, this was all, I don't know, it was all very strange what was going on with my father. And we went on a holiday once, me and my brother went on a holiday with her and him and her children. And we kind of all booked in as Mr. and Mrs. Gordon and everything. And it was all very uncomfortable. And, you know, I was quite, you know, it was, at one level, it was quite a nice holiday, but I was quite upset about it. I started at Thomas Bennett in September 1968. Started okay, but sort of after a year or two, I was getting relentlessly bullied by various people, not helped by my short temper. It got so bad, I stayed off school, refused to go back until it stopped. So I thought, right, this is going to be my protest. I'm just not going to go back. I eventually went back to school and had a meeting, and I agreed to actually take it seriously and do something about it. So my little one-child protest actually achieved something. My mum's getting quite depressed at this time. You know, her husband had left her, her children, including me, were often very unpleasant around her. And she attempted to take her own life. I found her in a semi-comatose state. She spent some time in hospital recovering from that. I remember around that time, one of my fond memories, visiting my uncle Peter's corner shop in Kingston. He's no longer with us. I remember I helped out there once in just before decimalisation. Great fun putting dual prices on everything. All very exciting for me. I went back and visited the shop actually a couple of years ago just to see if it was still there, and it was. It really hadn't changed that much, and I had a good chat with the inevitably Asian shopkeeper who was there. We moved to a smaller house in Tilgate in October 1970, by which time my father had moved out completely. I bought the record Jesus Christ Superstar soon after it came out. I saw the stage show. I can't remember when I saw that, actually. It was probably a bit later, actually. But it was kind of the first time that I'd really known anything about the story of Jesus. I mean, it might not be the best way of learning it, but it was something. But I must admit, I wasn't quite sure whether it was the same Jesus that was in the Bible. You know, it was all a bit confusing when you knew nothing about, you know, I didn't have any Christian background at all. My parents divorced. My father moved to Devon with his soon-to-be new wife, and opened a grocer shop in Broadclist, a place in Devon. Wasn't terribly successful. I remember him telling me that the only way he could actually sell things cheaply enough was to buy them from the local supermarkets rather than the wholesaler. So he remarried, but that marriage didn't last either, and they divorced. I don't really know when. Eventually he moved to Kingston-upon-Thames, got a job nearby there. Thomas Bennett, I became part of a group of us who were interested in radio, and a few of us attempted to start our own stations. We eventually managed this and ran a low-power FM station from our bedrooms for a year or two. During this time, my brother fell in with a bad crowd and started petty thieving from doorsteps and then later from schools. And they used to steal these cassette machines, and then they used to just introduce a little fault in them and bring them home to me to see if I could fix it, which of course I duly did. I can't remember where he said these things came from at the time at all. We ended up using some of the equipment in our radio broadcasting, and I remember a panic phone call to my friend Roger one day, who was broadcasting at the time, telling him to switch everything off because the police were on their way. Which was kind of a bit, you know, you almost dreamed of the day when your radio station got raided by the police and you got shut down, but they weren't interested in the radio station at all, just the stolen equipment that was being used. So, my brother was sent to a special school after that, run by some Catholic priests. I started watching some television programs, that sort of religious television programs that got me thinking more about God and religion. And I stayed on at the sixth form at Thomas Bennett, and I started to enjoy school a lot more then. The common room was great fun. We used to play our music, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, that sort of thing, on the record player there. And adjacent was the smoking room, which I later realised that tobacco wasn't the only thing going down there. But we were all totally innocent in those days, so just a strange smell wafting in. I was friendly with a group of people that went to St Mary's Church, and they invited me to some musical events, which I enjoyed. They kept working on me. 1974, I went to a crusade in a big tent behind what was then Southgate Hall. It's now Christ Church in Brewer Road. run by Sussex evangelist David Iliffe, who died a couple of years ago. I went there every night, even attempting to sing along with some of the hymns. On the final Saturday there, I saw a film, I can't really remember much about it, involved a Chinese Christian girl who had a terrible accident or something. It might have been on Underground Railway, and was very badly injured, turned to Christ. I blacked out. The only time I can remember doing this, I actually blacked out. There was just nothing, just darkness, and I couldn't see anything at the end of the film. And afterwards, I went round the back and I gave my life to the Lord. Two other friends of mine, including my school friend Roger, also did so at the same time. So I went home, told my mother all about it. Soon after, she became a Christian too. And we both attended Southgate Hall, whose members had been heavily involved with the crusade. I was coming up to the time when I was getting ready to do A levels and that sort of thing and higher education, and I remember I had to apply for extra funding available for train fares for attending interviews and things like that if you're on a particularly low income. I remember the person handling the applications was somewhat staggered at my household annual income of £975. I think it was about the lowest figure. How do I remember numbers like that? I think it was about the lowest number that he'd ever come across, because my mum wasn't really earning very much, and that was it, really. I applied for university, was accepted at Loughborough. Our school friend Roger was also accepted onto the same course, which was quite handy, as his dad had a car, and we didn't have one. I got involved with the Christian Union there, and there were loads of Christian groups, actually. There was the Navigators, the Christian Union, the Methodist Society, the Catholic Society, the Anglican Society, the Baptist Society, you name it, there were loads of them. But anyway, Christian Union was the biggest and best. I ended up there being, after a while, a hall rep, like you have each hall of residence has its own rep, and I ended up being the treasurer as well, you know, which is the start of a journey. I remember there was a memorable gift day. We needed a specific sum of money to do something very specific, and we didn't have any money. And we had a gift day. I said, right, okay, we want to do this. And we got exactly the sum of money without telling anybody what it was. So that was a kind of early demonstration of faith in giving. In 1976, I was baptized at Southgate Hall, and the verse that I chose for my baptism was Romans 8, verse 28. That I started this talk with, little really knowing how significant that would become over the years. In my second year, I moved into a house in the town, because generally you were in hall of residence in your first year and your final year, and the second year you were on your own, basically. Along with Roger, and moved into this house along with mostly Christian postgrads. We were the only two undergraduates, so we're a little bit weary about taking mere undergraduates, but they took us. And next door but one lived Alison, who's a sort of shy sixth former who used to visit and come and visit, and she just sat on the floor not saying anything. She basically fancied one of the postgrads who was there. We soon got quite friendly, but not too close. My brother had returned to Thomas Bennett, having served his time, so to speak, and appeared to be a reformed character. But in February 1977, just 3 days before his 15th birthday, well, basically he went to sleep and just didn't wake up again. Died in his sleep through, it was complications due to some sort of stomach problem that he'd had recently. And I remember getting a visit from the police officer at the house in Loughborough, being told to go to the University Medical Centre, which I did, and they told me about it, and spoke to my father on the phone. And I mean, Keith's death hit my mother really hard, obviously, and she never really fully recovered from it. So Alison was the one that sort of comforted me during this time, and we soon became very close. And on a trip to Nottingham one day, I proposed. She accepted, and we made plans to marry, not up there, but in Crawley, which was her choice, at Southgate Hall, after I'd left university. So all things worked together for good. Good things came from, you know, that tragedy of my brother dying. Later in 77, David Iliffe returned to do another crusade in Crawley, behind what is now Greenfields Baptist Church. This time I was a keen helper at it, and I was a night watchman. I remember sitting up all through the night, keeping an eye on the place during the night. in summer that year, Alison and I went, this was before we were married, we went hostelling in Snowdonia. And it was the first time really that I noticed that perhaps all wasn't quite right with her health. I mean, I wanted to go all the way up Snowdon, as you do, but she had to bail out halfway. I graduated from Loughborough, got a job with Burroughs Machines in Feltham, in Middlesex, which is a long way away, as did Roger. So we ended up going to the same university, we get the same first job. As my father was living in Kingston, not too far away, I stayed with him during the week and caught the bus to work and went home at weekends, which continued until we got married in September 1978 at Southgate Hall. And there is a picture of me and Alison with my mum and dad. Yeah, my hair's grown a bit that day. So both of our ministers spoke and we had a generally lovely time. We went to the Isle of Man on an aeroplane for our honeymoon, all very exciting, and stayed in a guest house. And another of these things I can remember, the guest house cost £4 a night. So we really splashed out on that. We didn't have a lot of money, to be honest. We were on the Newlyweds Council housing list, which was supposed to get you a house in about 4 months or something at the time, but it took much, much longer than that. We ended up living with my mum in Tilgate, which was not ideal. During this time, Alison became pregnant, gave birth to our first child one day after our first anniversary, which was, again, it happened. My mum knew nothing about it. We just went to the hospital overnight, and I came back in the morning and saw my mum and said, "Oh, you've got a grandson." So it was quite, we kept it quiet. We had a tough time with Stuart. He wasn't an easy child, always crying and demanding. I was commuting a long distance, working long hours, and it was tough for Alison. In December 1979, I got a new job in central London at Sea Containers, which was a bit easier for the commute. I was doing a moment with that company for nearly 28 years, which was most unexpected. When Alison and I, this is just a sort of testimony relating really to what Ian was saying last week. When we first went to Southgate Hall, we used to just put some loose change in the offering every week. But as Ian was telling us last week, it's not really the way to living in blessings. And when the realization came that God deserved and wanted more than that, it completely changed our approach. And it seemed the more we gave, the more we received. We got a council house in Broadfield in 1980 in May, not our first choice of neighbourhood, to be fair, which we later bought in 1989. Stuart continued his challenging behaviour, but he seemed to be a bright child. He could speak words fluently when, about the age of 18 months. In 1981, Alison became pregnant again, gave birth to Christina, or Tina as she is known, in August 1982. Around this time, the congregation in Southgate Hall had disbanded and was being scattered among other churches in Crawley, so we started attending Broadfield Fellowship with John Hall as pastor at the time. Almost as soon as Tina was born, Stuart virtually stopped talking. It was all a bit strange. We thought it was due to the birth of his sister, but we later found out it was not the case. Tina was a much easier baby than Stuart had been. In fact, the labour only lasted about an hour or two, even though she was over 8 pounds at birth. Alison's father died in 1983 at the age of 56. We knew it had something to do with his heart, but didn't really know what. Stuart continued to be a bit strange. He had some amazing abilities, like at the age of 5 he could tell you what day of the week any date was in a couple of seconds. He used to count on his fingers, not up to 10 like most people do, but using them as binary digits, sort of 0-1, which meant he could count up to 1023 on his fingers instead of 10, which was much more efficient. He started at Broadfield North, which is now Seymour School, in 1984. In those days, you had to basically queue up all night to get a place in school. It's all automated now. It's all done on the internet or whatever. In those days, you turned up at the school as early as you possibly could, like 3 a.m. or something. You just queued to make sure that you got one of the few places that was being offered. After a while, it became clear he needed extra help at school. He got half a day a week or something with his behaviour. This was provided. One teacher in particular, Dot Adamson, took him under her wing. He's maintained contact with her to this day, really, but she's very old and frail now. In 1985, I became entitled to a company car. Joy of joys after a promotion at work. So I thought I'd better learn to drive. the age of nearly 30. I'd never really bothered before. It just didn't. We went everywhere using buses and trains and lifts, and it was, you know, worked okay. I passed my test in 1986 at the third attempt. Picked up my shiny new car. I remember riding in the back of that is one of Tina's earliest memories. She remembers that first trip in the back of the car. And subsequently, Alison learned to drive as well, which gave us a bit more freedom. We used to attend Downs Bible Week every year with the fellowship in our tiny tent, not like the ones you get today. I was going to put a picture up of that, actually, but I haven't. That's in our little tent. There's one on Facebook, actually, if you ever look, you can find it. We went to Greenbelt and Spring Harvest a couple of times, and there were some proper mud baths in all that. Memorable mud baths, in fact. Tina started at Broadfield North in 1987. And she's soon sort of started looking after her big brother, in a sense, and she's kind of carried on doing that, really. She's always very defensive of him, and sort of keeps an eye on him. My father had been a heavy smoker all his life, and succumbed to lung cancer at the age of 65. Just literally retired, 65, get your pension, and then boom, lung cancer. As he became more ill, I visited him in Kingston most days after work. And one particularly sort of poignant moment was when my mother went to visit him, and I, you know, I hadn't seen my parents that close for years and years and years, since I was a tiny child. So he deteriorated rapidly and died in hospital in September 1989. Alison and I had been friends with a couple whom I will call John and Judy for the purposes of this talk. Some of you will know who I'm talking about. I knew John at school and had attended their wedding. We were heavily involved with their attempted radio and TV ventures, helped to finance them. When the opportunity to run a charity radio cracker radio station at Christmas 1991 came up, they jumped at the chance, and we were heavily involved. Broadcasts were made from St Mary's Church, but the whole thing was a bit of a disaster. Sort of not very good quality programming, terrible financial management, and it ended up as the only station in the country that actually made a loss, which is not the idea. In 1992, following various long meetings and discussions with the school and the education authority, Stuart started at Morehouse School in Farnham, which was actually a school for children with behavioural difficulties and dyslexia. Well, Stuart's about the least dyslexic person you could ever meet. And he boarded there weekly, came home on weekends. He didn't really have a terribly happy time there, really, but he managed to get a maths GCSE at the age of 12 and got a grade A maths A level at the age of 16, which was the first and probably the last time anyone at that school had taken and passed an A level. While he was at Morehouse, one of the teachers had had an experience of autism, realised that Stuart had Asperger syndrome, as it was known. Everything kind of then fell into place. He was really a textbook case. I mean, you could just pick up a book and read about him. He was described almost perfectly in books on the subject. Formal diagnosis didn't happen until he was 16. Things have moved on a bit since then, I think, in recognising these things and caring for people. I mean, looking back, it was possible to see signs of autism in both of our families. Alison's father was quite badly affected, as was she to a degree, and one of her brothers. And there were signs in both of my parents and some of my obsessions when I was younger. I mean, were quite ridiculous, the things I used to make lists of and the things I used to do. And it's all kind of sort of typical behaviour, really. In 1992, Alison was diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is basically an enlargement of the heart muscle, which limits its function, which she'd inherited from her father. So she, by this time, she had difficulty just going up that shallow slope to the shops in Broadfield, and she started medication to manage that condition. Radio Cracker was repeated at Christmas 1992, which was a much slicker operation, heavily drawing on hospital radio volunteers and broadcasting from County Mall, where the ladies' toilets now are, with a transmitter at the top of Tollgate Hill, which gave very good coverage. John and Judy were not involved. They were quite bitter about it. Alison and I were both on the committee. I did mad things like present programmes all night and then come to church the following morning, as you did when you were 35 or whatever I was then. In January 1993, John Hall said farewell, had a farewell party at the centre. 6 days later, Alison suffered a stroke. She was on the computer using the mouse. Suddenly her hand wouldn't move, and she eventually fell I was at work. Tina came home from school to find her on the floor behind the front door. At the age of 10, she managed to have the presence of mind to alert neighbours and summon the necessary help. And the stroke had affected the left side of her brain, so the right side of her body was paralysed. Her speech was affected. She spent several weeks in hospital. She regained some movement in her right leg fairly soon, but not her right arm. I remember it was just a mad time, and she was still church treasurer. While she was in hospital following a stroke, I took loads of money in to be counted in the day room, and the staff wondered what on earth we were doing. Another memorable event was Stuart, who had a particular approach to these things. Just, you know, very matter of fact, would lift her right arm and just drop it to see what happened, and so, you know, watch it fall down because you couldn't do a thing with it. He causing great amusement. I'd up until that point, I'd been doing mad things at work. I'd worked all through the night on more than one occasion. You know, you went in at weekends and bank holidays just to get stuff done. You never got any extra pay for any of this. We just did these sort of mad things. And I guess I neglected my family a bit during this time. But my outlook kind of changed completely at that point when Alison had the stroke. And I was pretty much a 9-to-5 guy from then on, because there were more important things in life. Recovery was slow. Alison had speech therapy, physiotherapy, occupational therapy, all sorts of therapy, you name it, helped to a degree. She could move her right arm after a few weeks. There were some ghost movements before that, which was very strange, where it kind of moved on its own. She never regained full use of it. She learned to write with her left hand. And over the years, she became more and more involved with all sorts of voluntary organisations like the Crawley Town Access Group. She continued her work with Faith in Action. Sally Jeffrey comes to talk to us from time to time from Faith in Action. That was, and Alison was pretty much the way that the church first made contact with Faith in Action. She carried on as church treasurer with some help from me, and after a period of time, she was deemed fit enough to resume driving, which meant she could do more on her own. So all things worked together for good. Later in 1993, Tina was also diagnosed with cardiomyopathy, started medication, which has been part of her life ever since. As far as we know, Stuart's clear of that. We had some good family holidays over the year. Two that stand out. We went to a lovely Christian couple family on their farm in Devon. We went there once in 1989 before Alison's stroke, and once in 1993 after it. We'd kind of planned to go back in 1997, but we bought a house instead. We went to Galway in Ireland in 1995. That was great. It was like the hottest summer they had in living memory. Nobody could ever remember that sort of heat in Ireland. 2001, we visited my aunt in Helmsdale, which is in the Highlands of Scotland, which was fascinating. She took us around the village. I saw my grandfather's old house, and she took us into various shops and introduced me to people. And nearly everybody she introduced me to, I was related to. You know, this is your cousin going that way, it's amazing. And it's kind of got me interested a bit in looking a bit more into the sort of family history, which I've done some of, but my aunt's done most of it, to be honest. 1994, my mother moved into a rest home to be with her mother, and, well, she needed some help herself, to be honest. She'd repeatedly kept fracturing her elbow to the extent that they just fused it in the end because they couldn't keep repairing it, and she was suffering from severe arthritis in one of her hands. In 1996 as well, following a long time with no full-time minister, John Downing came to the fellowship with his family. I think the ensuing years were quite a difficult time. Alison's relationship with John was rather strained. We had the great human sexuality debate within the URC. Some of you were around then. And many people left during that time. 1996, Stuart left Moorhouse, and after trying to find somewhere suitable for his sixth form, we settled on Hereward College in Coventry. Not exactly local, a college which was primarily for the physically disabled. So he was a bit like the one-eyed man in the land of the blind, being about the only person that could walk. He studied photography, computing, and his English GCSE that he hadn't been able to get while he was at school. My maternal grandmother died in 1996 at the age of 1994. She left us a sum of money, not enormous, but it helped us to buy a bungalow in Peace Pottage. Alison was having increasing difficulty with the stairs, so it suited us quite well. We moved to Horsham Road in 1997, a few months after Dave and Viv moved there. It was great to have them just a few doors away. And when Ed was born, Elizabeth came down the road and played with some of Stuart and Tina's old toys in the middle of the night. At the start of 1998, Alison's health took a turn for the worse. One occasion she nearly died through lack of oxygen. I'm just going to read out, she wrote something for the newsflash, which it's quite, let me read it. As people seem to assume my health is better than it is, I thought it best to give you some up-to-date information. I have severe hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Unlike a heart attack, I cannot expect ever to get any better. It's more like a broken back. It does not actually get any worse, but it stops the rest of your body working as well as it was designed to. Basically, it means I get very tired very quickly, which is why I must sit around looking decorative and wait for you to come to me. On Christmas Day, I could not open the door to the social hall and had to wait for someone to come. Calling loud enough to be heard is out of the question. That requires your heart to work properly. I sometimes do not even have the energy to put some lunch in the microwave. I'm sorry I cannot have parties in our wonderful new house. I'd love it if you would come and tell me what I've missed when I cannot be at a meeting. I rarely manage to get out for a walk because people do not want to go at my speed and I get too tired to drive far. Tina helps with my hair. Kevin ends up doing a lot for me. I wish he had more time to do what he would choose to do. Then he might be able to relax. He does the necessary things, which means we do not have time for the fun things. Of course I get depressed. I hate being dependent on people for so much. I wish there was something I could do in return. I find my life boring and frustrating. I hate being surrounded by jobs that I used to do without thinking, which I now find too hard. I wish I had the energy to amuse myself. I have managed to get involved in things that keep me occupied, but they are not ideal. A few weeks later, she suffered a second stroke. This turned out to be on the right side of her brain, so it left her seriously incapacitated. She was unconscious. She was still aware of my presence and talking to her. I got a lot of support at this time, especially from Viv. Just over a week later, I got a call at home on one of my rare trips home during that time. It's about 6:30 a.m. to come to the hospital, and I went up, told Stuart and Tina that I was going, and she died a short while later. There was a song by a Christian singer, Morgan Cryer, we both liked, called See You on the Other Side, and the last words I ever spoke to her, seconds before she died, See You on the Other Side, Alison. So Alison died, she was 38. I went to church the day after she died. Well, what else was I supposed to do, really? There was a very emotional service, lots of visitors. Support that Viv and Tina gave me was amazing. Tina, despite losing her mother, was an absolute rock. Cremation and funeral services were a blessed time, and I'm just going to play a song that was played at Alison's cremation from Proverbs 3. This is by Sixpence None the Richer. That was really, that's what Alison lived by, really. Tina sang at her funeral. There were many people present from various groups she'd been part of. I spoke myself, part of what I said. Her death at this time is obviously very hard for us to accept. We'd only recently moved to a new bungalow after many years in a house that was not of Alison's choosing. She was very happy in Peace Pottage and was looking forward to spending a good few years there. But on reflection, I'm glad that we moved when we did and that Alison spent her last 6 months in a house she loved. Death has touched my family more than I could have expected at my age, but good things can come from even such painful events. My younger brother's early death in 1977 was the event that brought Alison and me together in a special way. She was the one who was there to hold my hand and listen as I tried to come to terms with it. My grandmother's death in 1996 provided the money for us to be able to afford to move to our new bungalow. Good things have already happened since Alison's death and will continue to happen. Praise God. All things work together for good. Tina also sang a song at school dedicated to her mum and received a special Endeavour Award. She also sang on the song Swing Low Sweet Chariot dedicated to her on a CD that was produced by the school. I remember shortly after Alison's death I spoke to somebody at a coffee shop. I think he was from Kingdom Faith who'd been widowed some time ago. He'd not remarried and he said to me, "Don't get married again unless God gives it to you in writing." Little did I know. I went to Revive Camp for the first time in 1998, commuting daily rather than camping. I was a bit of an angry man at the time, I must admit, about what had happened. Viv and family looked after me as ever, but I've been there every year since, as has Rachel. later in the year, it became apparent Stuart wasn't going to complete his studies at Hereward in the 2 years that he was allotted, so I had to negotiate to get another year's funding so he could continue. They took the recent bereavement into consideration, and he was allowed to stay for a third year. We had a visitor to our church, Peter Green, who's since died from Slough Parish. He was involved in Walk of a Thousand Men, as was Phil. And he spoke about the mission, the forthcoming Walk Kent, in May 1999. I wouldn't really have ever considered doing something like this before, but as I sat there, I thought, is there actually any reason not to do this? I couldn't think of one, because my children were old enough to look after themselves. I could just go off and do it. So I signed up, did the training, and in May 1999 went off to Marden in Kent for a week's mission. We all met up on the first day, sitting on a field, the walkers and the walk associates, which included women. One of these women was Rachel. Unfortunately, at first I only really had eyes for a rather younger girl called Linda, but Rachel and I got closer as the week progressed. Until we surreptitiously held hands in the back of a car during one journey. When we parted, we weren't quite sure whether we'd ever meet again, but we exchanged phone numbers, and on the following Monday, I think it was, I plucked up the courage to call her. Visits to her flat in Chelmsford ensued. There was a memorable goat's cheese event there. It was a lovely meal, I just don't like goat's cheese. Visits by her to Peace Pottage. Tina was surprised when I came back from this mission with a new girlfriend, but she'd actually just got together with a new boyfriend from school, Justin, and Tina and Rachel clicked and got on well together, I think, from the beginning. Stuart started at Loughborough University in September, my old stomping ground, studying mathematics. It was hard work getting him accepted there. He had a bit of a strange mix of qualifications. I remember long phone calls on the steps outside Ashburnham on a very dodgy mobile phone, trying to finalising it that summer. Also in September, Rachel and I got engaged, planned to marry the following year. Rachel was by now a frequent visitor, getting to know and be known by the fellowship, and a date was set for a wedding at Rachel's church in Colchester in May 2000. Oh! Yay, that's Rachel and me and Rachel's parents. Also in 1999, sorry, going back a bit, the fellowship was making plans to leave the URC. I became an elder, much to my surprise, along with Dave. By now, John Downing had moved on, and Peter Barker was looking after us, doing an excellent job. We left the URC and became an independent church and registered charity from January 2000, became an Ichthys Link church, having become closer to them through attending the summer camp at Ashburnham. At our wedding, Tina and Elizabeth were bridesmaids, along with the younger daughters of two of Rachel's friends, and Stuart and Viv shared best man duties. We went to Torquay for our honeymoon. Rachel moved down here, got a job at Princess Royal Hospital, Penzance. I was close. We went to Penzance for our honeymoon. It's Cornwall. Oh, no, Torquay's Devon, isn't it? Are you sure we went to Penzance? Oh, well, there you go. We went. Oh, well, I went to Torquay. Yeah, I knew I'd get something wrong. Rachel, moved down and got here and got a job at Princess Royal Hospital in Haywards Heath. Rachel and I had no plans at all to have any children. I mean, for various reasons, it was just not on the agenda. Tina left Holy Trinity in the summer and embarked upon a gap year before university. During this time, she worked for a finance company in Redhill and ran up huge mobile phone bills. In 2001, she started Roehampton University, studying English literature. During her holiday, she was often temping at Sea Containers, where I worked in London, doing various administrative and technical tasks. She's very well liked and regarded there. In October 2000, Roe was born, and Rachel and I went down the road to babysit the children, bringing back memories of Ed's birth 3 years earlier. I'd been attending this pop choir for a couple of years with a bunch of mostly women, which was great fun. But when this finished, I decided to take up guitar lessons at Thomas Bennett, something I'd been meaning to do for many years. I enjoyed this. Made reasonable progress on how good you can judge for yourself. This obviously helped with worship leading, which I'd kind of drifted into over a period of time, dating back from when Tony Folger left the church and I took over leadership of the music group. Also around this time, I made a New Year's resolution to give up meat for various reasons. 14 years later, I haven't lapsed, so that's certainly the longest time I've ever kept a New Year's resolution for. Stuart graduated in 2002 with first class honours. We had to decide on the next move. An opportunity to do a PhD came up, so he embarked upon that. Having lived in halls of residence and as an undergraduate, he now had to find his own accommodation, so became a lodger at his grandma's house where Alison lived, and he remains there to this day. They have a sort of mutual dependency. Rachel and I had some good holidays. Went to Bath, Paris, Rome, probably some others, but I can't remember them before the children came along. We didn't actually go abroad again until our family holiday in Malta last February. As I said, we weren't planning any children, but by 2003 we changed our minds. In May 2004, Elliot was born. It wasn't an easy birth. Rachel had suffered from preeclampsia, had to be induced. Took some time. He was a tiny baby, only 5 pound 11. Generally thrived. Rachel went back to work. We had fun juggling childminders, nursery and playgroup and that sort of thing for Elliot. Tina graduated in 2004, got a job back at Holy Trinity, working as PA to the headmaster. Justin was already working there as a systems manager, so they saw a lot of each other. By now they were engaged and the wedding was planned for the following year. Stuart got his PhD in 2005. He produced his thesis, which I couldn't understand a word of. During his research, he presented a paper in Helsinki, something, you know, would have been quite unimaginable a few years earlier. Since then, he's learned to drive, appeared on the telly on Countdown, after several short-lived jobs, has found a permanent job in Nottingham, which seems to suit him and his employer. He was baptised at Revive in 2009. He's had some troubles as well. He was quite badly beaten up a few years ago and has had a few brushes with the police and local hostelries following various misunderstandings. In 2005, Justin and Tina were married at Crawley Baptist Church and settled down to live in Ifield. Just as Tina had helped with our wedding, Rachel helped a great deal with theirs. And there's Elliot at the age of about one, and Tina and me. In my speech, I said, as a tribute to both Alison and Tina, I would like to read the following passage from the book of Isaiah, chapter 40. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. All things work together for good. In 2006, my mother turned 80. We visited her in her home for birthday party, which was a generally happy time. Elliot doesn't remember it now, but her health deteriorated after that, and she died in October that year, so I was now an orphan. The company I worked for, Sea Containers, had been in financial trouble for a while, unable to pay its debts, and it was apparent that my days there were numbered. Finally, I was made redundant in October 2007. Final months weren't terribly happy. We fought and failed to get proper compensation. My redundancy coincided with all sorts of other things. Tina had a pacemaker fitted a couple of days before. Tina and Justin moved to their new house in Southgate on the very day I was made redundant. And Rachel and I, meanwhile, decided to have another child, and she duly became pregnant. Gave birth to Joseph in August 2008. He was huge, 10 pound 3 ounces, but the birth was easier than Elliot's. However, he did have some problems and spent, a week or so in the special care baby unit at Princess Royal. Seeing the babies there inspired Rachel to donate breast milk, which she did, accumulating about, 40 litres? 40, yeah. Once home, he too thrived and was, in fact, he was sleeping through the night at about 8 weeks, but his sleep patterns have continued to challenge us ever since. I don't know if it's improving or not, but at least it's fairly consistent now. Looking back at my children, I think Tina and Elliot probably take after me, and Stuart takes after Alison, and Joseph takes after Rachel, so it's a fairly good balance. A couple of weeks after Joseph's birth, Elliot started at Handcross Primary School. He's done well there, he loves it, and they love him. As I was no longer working, I kind of became the house husband and general child carer while Rachel went out to work. Her job moved to Crawley when the new hospital was built in Langley Green. I became more involved with the school in Handcross, becoming a governor, joined the Community Centre General Council, started volunteering with the Lighthouse Project, following a visit by them to the fellowship. I've continued to look after websites and for various organisations and fix people's computers and so on. September 2012, Joseph started at Handcross Primary just after his fourth birthday. I think he's been a bit of a challenge for them, but he's bright and his reading and spelling have been particularly good. I've mentioned this before, when I turned 55, I decided it was time to get serious about Bible reading. And as I said before, I decided that I'd follow a plan, I'd read it through in 1 year, and I managed it and read through it again last year. And I've now started on the third pass through, and it does get easier, I promise you. You start actually remembering bits of it and understanding bits of it better. The end of 2013, Rachel's mum died following a long illness, which was the first death in the family, really, that our children had been affected by. They'd visited Grandma several times in her nursing home. Rachel's dad spent a long time helping to care for her. She's been supporting him since. Last year, I became a trustee of the new community centre charity, which formed, continue to be heavily involved in its running. I also registered as self-employed in an attempt to put my various bits of computer work on a firmer footing. It's too early to say what's going to come of that, really. Tina's health took a turn for the worse last year. She had several spells in hospital following heart problems and has also had problems with her lungs and things that are still not resolved. And she desperately needs healing. She desperately, desperately needs healing. Last December, she left her job at Holy Trinity, started working for an IT services company in Redhill. It was quite a challenge with all the health issues. Last week, she had to organise an exhibition stand in Olympia in London for the company, sort of pretty much single-handed. So she's doing well there. Later this year, Elliot hopes to start Holy Trinity School. Won't get that confirmed until later this month. He's sad that Tina's left because I think he was looking forward to his big sister being there. Elliot and Joseph both love Tina and Justin and get on really well with them. They love Stuart too, but he's hard at work. Now, last September, Ian Phillips spoke at the joint service about his life, and it was possibly one of the most moving and memorable sermons I've ever heard. And in it, he highlighted various things that had happened to him, and saying this is the story of my life, but not the whole story. And the message was that only God knows the whole story. And if I'm just going to play a little excerpt from it now, which resonates with me.
I'm Ian, and I am a follower of Jesus Christ, saved by the abundant and immense grace of God. I have some really, really good qualities. And I have some really, really bad ones. But I am loved by God. Being loved by God is the story of my life, and thank God only He knows the whole story. The wonderful life-changing truth that I hold on to with all my heart is that God knows me in my best moments, and God knows me in my worst moments, and only God knows the whole story. Truth is, friends, that my best moments are extraordinarily quite incongruous with my worst moments. In my best moments, I willingly choose the way of love. In my worst moments, I willingly choose the way of evil. And only God knows the whole story. And the truth is that my best moments and my worst moments are all the story of my life. And only God knows the whole story.
Yes, I could really identify with that. He then went on to read from 1 Peter 1:13-2:3. I don't think I'm going to read this because I haven't really got time, but you can read it yourself. And he also explained how, asked a question as to when did God say to Jesus, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." And of course the answer was at his baptism, at the start of his ministry. So not after he'd completed his ministry and done all the things he was on earth to do, but before he'd started it. So he loved him because of who he was, not because of what he had done. And he loves you because you are his precious child, and only he knows the whole story. Show me your ways, Lord, teach me your paths. Guide me in your truth and teach me, for you are God my Saviour, and my hope is in you all day long. Remember, Lord, your great mercy and love, for they are from of old. Do not remember the sins of my youth and my rebellious ways. According to your love, remember me, for you, Lord, are good. All things work together for good. Amen. One little thing I remember Dave saying actually was that we take many things for granted, like when we turn a hot tap on, hot water will come out. I grew up in a house where we only had hot water if we planned it long in advance. So even today, I must admit, I still get a little kick. And it still amazes me when I turn the tap on and hot water comes out. It's just incredible. I know you probably all just know. Oh, it's great. It's wonderful. So, I mean, in summary, our lives, they take many steps, some forward, some backwards, some sideways. We never know what tomorrow holds. One thing I've learned, anything could happen tomorrow. Only God knows. And I try not to take anything for granted anymore. But I know that I can rely on God's love and God's goodness. One more song.
Lord, you've been good to me.